2 weeks ago, Bill Carson took and had a message here, a PowerPoint presentation, in which he asked one question, I think basically one question. Anybody remember what that is? Just out of curiosity. Who do you think you are? Thank you, Odd. Who do you think you are? And he presented that, and not that I'm going to review his message again there. He had different points, as well as how to improve your image and concerned about your self-esteem. But it reminded me of a story or a little thing that I just read a few months ago there. And it's around Halloween time, and where people went to restaurants, and some of the, in this particular restaurant, the different employees were dressed up with different type of costumes. And so as this lady went into the restaurant, she recognized different ones, like maybe a cowboy outfit, a baseball player, you know, policeman. But then she saw this one waitress, and she was covered all over her body with sponges. And she says, "What are you supposed to be?" And so I was thinking of, who do you think you are? Well, what do you think, what are you supposed to be? A person was covered with sponges all over. And the lady says, "Well, I'm self-absorbed." So in conclusion to Bill's message, I thought that was pretty, I liked that one pretty good. I found this article, and I sort of stumbled upon it a few months ago at work there, and it's in a trade magazine. And the person that wrote it, his name is Gerard Forte, or Forte. I'm not quite sure how you pronounce his last name there, F-O-R-T-E, but Gerard Forte, I would take it. And he wrote this article, and I'd like to take and basically use a lot from that, mixed with some other things that I have as well as thoughts that I put together. So sometimes I'll be referring to that, sometimes I will be adding other materials to that. But he started out as an engineer, and he designed a new widget. And every time you don't know what something is, they call it a widget, all right? So he's designed this widget. He spent years perfecting it and getting it perfect and getting it to work. And now they tell him it's up to him as the engineer to take and do the training. Well, this person as the engineer says, well, that's not really what I had in mind, number one. And it's not what I really wanted to do. And so this idea of training will bring out this first thing here. Anybody know what this is called? A T-square, all right. Does it look like a good T? Well, it's a little lopsided there, but let's see if we get it. So we'll put it on that side for right now, for T, for training. We're going to take and talk about that for just a little bit here. In his article, he says that mostly group training is presented. In other words, if you're taking it about a particular machine and you're training somebody how to do it, well, you have to hit the start button first, then you do this, then you do that. And so it's kind of just like do this, do this, do this, kind of one thing after another. And as far as the training goes, he suggested that, well, you need materials to take and train with. So that's something that's necessary. However, he says often they're fairly complex. They also may be poorly written. They may also be poorly organized. And last but most importantly, rarely indicates what's important or what isn't important. And so these are some of the problems with training manuals. Some time ago I took and went to one class in Michigan, and we came home with a box of training manuals that big. It was about 7 manuals in this box of things for one machine. And, of course, we spent just a week there, but we didn't learn everything that was in those books. He says, everything you'll need is there. You just got to try to find it, that's all. So that's a good example of training manuals. But most training manuals are big as far as thickness goes. And so let me emphasize a couple points. The first point is that training fosters rule-bound behavior. It fosters rule-bound behavior. Second of all is this idea of need to know, and I'm not going to go in and elaborate on that particular one, but this idea of need to know, maybe you're getting more than what you need. Thirdly, he says the material, when it's a good material, will provide examples and show you how to do it. That's when the material is good as far as that goes. Okay, we have one key on this side. What do you think the other key might be? No? That's a good idea. Training is first over on this side. Teaching is kind of its corollary there. And so as an engineer, you might have been told that you had to do the training, but maybe what he really had to do was the teaching. Is there a difference? That's the question I was asking as I was reading through this material. And so we're going to start off with a few definitions. First of all, on training from Webster. And I'll need a couple people if they want to help me. I'll give you a few verses here. If somebody wants to read one of these verses, take one apiece. The first one is Isaiah 6:1. Who wants to look up that? When I tell you to do that. 1 Kings 10:2. Okay, Mike, 1 Kings 10:2. And Proverbs 22:6. Okay, Jorge has that one. Okay. Training, as far as Webster goes, has a lot of different definitions. Okay, Isaiah 6:1, read that, please.
In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon the throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple.
Okay, there's the word train. Train fills the temple. A lot of times you'll see a train with a person that's getting married. The train is what follows. Another definition that it has is followers of a procession. Then another definition, 1 Kings 10:2.
1 Kings 10:2. As you came to Jerusalem with a very great train, with camels that bear spices and very much gold and precious stones, when she was come to Solomon, she communed with him of all that was in her heart.
Okay, who was that talking about, Mike? Yeah, right, the Queen of Sheba. She comes to David. She has a train of things. And so another definition is things moving in a line, and that can be people or animals or vehicles, like a locomotive, and that's cars that follow after, things that move in a line. Fourth, is another definition is supplies of an army, that it follows in a certain train. And then another one that was interesting here, series of events that follow something happening. An example that was given is famine followed war in its train. So it's a series of events that follow some happening. Another definition is connected sequence. For instance, a train of thought. A couple more. Connected parts or emotion, such as a gear train. And also line of gunpowder, explosives and stuff. And so those were some that, you know, we would maybe not necessarily think of when we're talking about this subject of training. What we'd be thinking more of is like this, a guide that helps in the growth of a plant. A guide that does the mental, moral, or other development of bringing up or rearing, kind of that idea. A guide that provides the mental, moral, or other things along like development. I'll skip one other one here and come back to that. Discipline animals to do tricks. In other words, you're training up a child. Child. Could be a child to do tricks, too. And then fit for athletic contest. You train for athletic contest. And we had our memory verse for this morning. I press towards the mark. And so there's training involved there. Or aim at something with a gun. So there's many definitions, and as I was reading through all those different definitions, I was thinking of somebody that comes over here as an immigrant and has to learn our language just in that one word alone. How many variations that is to take and try to understand or comprehend. And I said, no wonder it's hard for our people to take and pass on what we're talking about. But that's a little bit about the definition of training. Another one that goes along with the definition I want to give from Webster's about preaching. We're talking about teaching, but what about preaching? We hear that all the time as far as preaching goes, and it's by definition speak in public on religious matters. Secondly, to give moral or religious advice. And it says this as a sidelight, especially in a tiresome manner, like a boring or wearisome manner. And so sometimes we might feel that that's how the preaching comes across. I don't know. But as an example, we might think about, don't preach at me. I don't want to hear what you have to say, you know. But another one that I spotted, you might say it was a silent kind of preaching, was on the bulletin board that's outside of the Presbyterian Church on Lake Avenue. Anybody saw what was on that sign recently, by any chance? Okay, Kathy? You think it's hot here? Yep. You think it's hot here now? Jesus saves. And so I thought, and without saying a whole lot, that said a whole volume of different things. And so I enjoyed that as a way of preaching. Webster has teaching as well in the Bible. I mean, in its dictionary, it also has it in the Bible, yeah. But in the dictionary, it's to show how to do something. This is on teaching now. To give lessons to or instruct, to give lessons about on a subject, to provide with knowledge, insight, etc. And so here's teaching, training, and preaching. So when we come back to the question, is it the same? Is training and teaching the same? And the answer is no. Okay? Just so that you know that teaching and training are not the same. Okay? Teaching and training are not the same thing. There is a difference. Let me give you a couple examples that I jotted down for training. After you leave today and go to whatever destination you're going to, what are you going to do? How are you going to get there? What are you going to use to get to wherever you're going generally? A vehicle, a car, a truck, a vehicle. So how many are you going to think about how to do that? You're just going to get in your vehicle and put it on automatic pilot and away it goes, you know? You don't have to think about, most people at this point, don't have to think about driving. Why? Because you trained how to take and drive that automobile, that truck, that car, whatever it might be, and you can do it without even thinking about it. Many times as you might come home, as I found myself coming home, I got from point A to point B, and I says, how did I get to that? I don't even remember going through those things. Somehow we can do that. But what about, should we be taught rather than trained about how a car works? Would that be beneficial to you? Well, it might be. It might help Ron out, because if you smoke the car when you shouldn't have been driving it, now he doesn't have to do as much work. So there might be some time when you want to be taught rather than trained on how things are about a car. So I thought about that one particular example. Thought about Aunt Ruth up here playing the piano, or any other person playing an instrument. Is it real easy for you to play that, Aunt Ruth? Yeah? You don't even have to think about it, right? You think about more about the music and some other things. In other words, after all the years of training, you could automatically go through there and get up and just go to town on it. And now you're concentrated more on maybe the teaching part about the music aspect, and you don't have to worry about the training anymore. A couple others that I thought about is with regards to speaking. As we have children, even as the young ones up here, they have to learn how to speak. They have to learn how to hear. We wonder if they're ever going to learn how to hear. But those are things that we train and spend time with. And so that idea of training up a child, Proverbs, I think we have somebody read that. Proverbs, read that one for me. Tor? Go ahead. Okay, train up a child in the way he should go, but it means a little bit more than training. As we said, training and teaching are two different things. And so in that aspect, there's two things involved in there, training and as well as teaching for children. Training as far as reading, training as far as writing. These are activities that you learn how to do. Another one that we're maybe just familiar with quite a bit is the NASA space program, what's going on right now. These people have put on years of taking and training so they can perform a mission up there, and it's very helpful for them to have all this training, because as they come upon unknown things, what do they do with those things? Well, maybe by putting all their training together, they can figure out what to do. And they also have NASA back on the Earth here, the space agencies, the space centers. They're also doing their thinking for them and helping them through some of the problems that they might have. But I thought that was a good example of something that's being trained right at the current time that you're familiar with. So there's different examples about training that we have. But as I said before, there is a difference between training and teaching here. So I'll get back to this other aspect here in just one second. Okay. From the article, it had these differences between teaching and training. As far as training goes, fundamentally, training is completely addressing a topic with responses that are fixed. Okay, this is talking about training. You're addressing a topic with responses that are fixed. Training, and this is one of the things that I'd like you to understand, training changes how you perform. So as you take and learn how to drive a car and you keep learning it, or as you take learning on playing an instrument and you keep doing it, you're able to take and perform better, hopefully. So training emphasizes or works on those aspects of performing better. The NASA space program, they continually keep training and training and training. They're able to do all those task without even thinking. Teaching, on the other hand, provides conceptual tools. In other words, it addresses unrestricted fields. In other words, training was involved with fixed things, where teaching involves all kinds of things, unlimited. And so you need to take in teaching to learn to analyze. So as training changes the way you perform, teaching changes how you think. And so that's what he wanted to take and point out, the major difference between the two. And I'll go over those again. Training changes how you perform. Teaching changes how you think. And so this article, as I said, to me, was a very good explanation, clearly, of trying to take and talk about the two of them. Further, he goes on and says about the teaching, I'll read just a little bit in this one section that he has here, because I'd like to take and think more about the teaching aspect for the rest of the time. When you teach, you try to convey fundamental ideas that can be used. This is usually harder than training because there is less structure. Teaching is open-ended. How much of what topics will be best? And here come some of the problems. It's harder. Why is it harder? Getting people to think is rarely easy. Learning concepts that you must understand enough to apply takes effort. But learning and understanding concepts is incomparably more valuable than training. This is because concepts can be applied in unlimited ways, where training is restricted to special situations. And so I thought that part of it was very good to take. And we all know that the teaching comes harder, and it's something that we might shy away from. At the end of this section, he says, with regards to maybe your student may be smarter than you, and so you shouldn't be shocked by that. It says, no one can know every concept and application, not even the teacher. And I think that's quite true. If you realize that your student sometimes will take and help you learn things that you never saw before, and we've had, you know, different ones of the teachers up there from the Sunday school say that the things they've learned from the kids has been a blessing to them over the years. And so there is a big difference between the teaching and training. And let let me go back to the beginning of the article and refer to the fact that this engineer, when I said about the fact that he was supposed to, after he designed this thing, he was supposed to do the training, what he was really expected to do was to train an operator, to teach a technician, and to educate the public about his particular product. And so he had to cover all three bases. They're kind of separate. Train, teach, and then educate, involving maybe training and teaching together. One example that I'll give that I can remember that made this difficult is this training aspect. We were to another school in Chicago sometime, and it was another machine there, and there was just a few of us there in the class, a handful, and so the teacher was able to work with more or less with one-on-one, and that's all he did. He was the instructor for this material for the company. That's what his job was, to take and teach and train, and he was very good at doing what he was doing. But then they got some new equipment, and he didn't know very much about it, and so he says, well, you're probably going to see this stuff in a short time. I'm going to go and get the engineer to take and come in and try to explain this stuff to you. And so this guy came in, and he started talking about something and writing a little something on the board, and he said, nah. And then he started talking a little bit more, and he wrote something on the board, nah. And he went on like this for about 20 minutes. And in his head, this guy was full. This guy had worked on this project of this new thing, and he knew this machine. The guy says backwards, forward, and... But he couldn't take and present the concepts of what he knew in his head, you know. And so this is the trouble sometimes about why somebody's good in one area, but they may not be good in another area. And so he had to actually end up leaving the class, and the teacher had to try to fill in the best he could do. He just gave up on trying to take and do it. He said, the teacher, after he left, he says, this guy knows it all. He knows this material cold. You just can't take and tell. So there is a gift to taking and doing some teaching and training by different individuals. Thinking of another current example, and that is, I thought about the soldiers that because of the war going on there, all the training that they go through, why is it important? Well, if you didn't have a war going on, they might not think of that it's very important. But now as you get over there in real life situations, the training is your life. And the teaching that you get may save your life or save somebody else's life. And so we realize that the battle physically is very strong. How about spiritually? How strong do we take and realize the battle is out there spiritually as well? Peter was asked, do you love me? And his response, Christ's response was, feed my sheep. And so again, as we talk about training and teaching, that's what we've tried to do as far as the Sunday school over all these years, is to provide training and teaching with the spiritual part of it, the spiritual battle that's out there. Now, I sort of kept these things as separate things all this time, but really, they're not really mutually exclusive. That means that there are some times where there's crossovers. Sometimes there's training that goes along with teaching, and sometimes there's teaching that goes along with training, just like with preaching. Preaching is not sometimes all the way just on preaching and just about salvation. I just heard recently about preaching, and it also involves some teaching as far as future events goes, just as well as teaching might include some preaching. Uncle Dave was speaking Thursday night, and it was something that had that aspect to me of preaching as part of the teaching that was in there. And so while they're separate and they're different, and there is a big difference, they may take an overlap at different times and at different subjects. Another area, and he had a lot more that I'm not even going to get to, but he had one other area that was really pretty important for teaching, and that is when you have an error. Basic errors. There's two errors, and the one is I'll just give the second one here and skip this. The second one is a more devastating error, and that is when you are training instead of teaching. In other words, you were supposed to be doing teaching, but instead you did training. And he points out the fact that this is especially devastating when it's involving powerful forces that are being controlled. And so again, that's an important point to realize, that if you mix it up and don't get the teaching done right, when powerful forces are involved, you might have a problem. And he gives an example that you're familiar with here, and I just want to... starts off with this kind of an example here. Supposing this was connected, so this was inside of this thing here. This is just water in here, but it's colored so you can see it. And this is kind of dirty, so I put... But if you press this, air comes out of this thing. So if this was inside of this, what would happen if I squeezed this? Huh? Well, not only water bubbles. Yeah, you get air. But what would happen to the water? It would go up or down? Up, okay. You're adding more pressure to that, and so it would take and go up. Because this is all closed and this is closed, so I don't have it connected to show you how that works, but that's what would happen. And so that's a concept, if you were trying to teach it, as he says, a simple concept that says that there's a relationship between water increasing and pressure increasing. However, he gives the example of the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant on March the 28th, 1979. How many of you remember something happening way back then? Three Mile Island, okay? Well, apparently, these people, again, have been trained to take and react to different things and trained well, except that something malfunctioned as far as the sensor goes, and so just the opposite of that thing happened, and they didn't know what to do with it. And so what he is suggesting is if they had been taught different principles, maybe they could have reacted and done something differently. They did the wrong thing, apparently, and as a result had the problems that they had there. And that's what he says, that's what this author says here happened. So the idea of teaching when powerful forces are being controlled, certainly nuclear power plants, some pretty powerful forces there, teaching is very important to have it at the right time with the right things. Somebody look up 1 John 2:27 and read that. 1 John 2:27. Who's got it? Okay, Tim. Okay, thanks, Tim. The idea about the fact that no man has to teach you about something, and just to expand upon that, I'm not going to explain about that verse, but just the idea of that thought about when we need teaching and when we don't. Another example of a class that we were just recently in with a friend of mine in the training, this person is very good at programming. In other words, taking a language and converting it into something. So he has those skills behind him. He's been able to set up other machines and program them, and he has done so, has those skills behind him. And so we were in this class for learning, for training on some new equipment that we have in the plant. And it was kind of with not just training, but hands-on, so there was more teaching. And that's why I said they're not sort of mutually exclusive. We had to be trained in the stuff, but we were able to have hands-on, supposedly, so that we could get the teaching aspect of the material as well, too. And so as we were going through different examples based on things that we were supposed to learn and try out and see how they were supposed to work out. He was having all kinds of trouble doing it. And I finally realized a few weeks ago I had talked to him about something else, and he was having the same kind of problem, only now it's with the class. And I said to myself, I finally talked to him at lunchtime. I says, you know what your problem is? He says, what? I says, you already know it. He says, what do you mean I already know it? I says, you already know all this stuff. All you got to do is, it's a different type of application. All you got to do is take and apply it. You have everything that you need to take and do this particular thing. And he was fighting it. He was having some difficulty, and so he was asking for help. And so sometimes that's a good idea, to ask for help when we're having difficulty. But he didn't need that help. He had all the material at his fingertips in his head, and he didn't need any further help. But he was fighting, sort of like going through in his own mind, to take and solve this on his own. And the teacher recognized this and knew that he could do this. And he says, I'm not giving you any help. You figure it out. And so he was upset by that. But it's something that he knew that he could do. And sometimes maybe that's our case as well, too. We've been taking and spending many times, and you've been here and learned from different things. And heard different things. So at this point, for most of you, you've been here enough to know that you have almost all the things that you need to take and function for life, and yet we have difficulty taking and stumbling and applying it. Another example was my own daughter. When she was taken in grade school there, she had learned how to do math by memory, the training method, 2 + 2 = 4, let's say, like that. So the training part was all there, but now comes time for the application, the teaching aspect of it later on, and she says, I can't solve the problem. Well, the problem was that it was converted over to words and put in sentence structure, and she didn't know how to take and convert it from sentence structure back into a format that she was used to solving. I says, you have all the things that you need to do, you can do that. And she said, no, you don't. Well, I showed her, yes, you do. You don't need it. You have it all. And so I can remember that even with my own daughter. So this is the thing that we struggle with the most sometimes, is in our teaching. We might think that we need maybe training when we really need teaching, or we might need teaching when we really need training. But in many cases, we may have all the necessary material already, and to take and apply it, we don't want to go through that process of learning the different things and failing and having the errors. And so that becomes the very difficult struggle that we have. Uncle Dave's message Thursday night was from Exodus chapter 12 about applying the blood on the post. And so they had to take and perform or be trained in the sense of what they had to do. And they had to take and do that. And so if they didn't do that, they would die. But now, years later, perhaps many of them are still thinking about the Passover, and they're still doing it, as I said, training before. Training deals with doing performance and not understanding the teaching behind that Passover scene. And he was trying to explain about that significance to us down through the years of, it just doesn't mean the Passover, but it refers to the Lord Jesus Christ. And so there's a sort of an example there between training and teaching. Okay, a few more people to take and read some more verses here. Acts 16, 20 and 21, when I ask you for it. Acts 16, 20 and 21, who's going to do that? I got about 5 or 6 of these here, so. Who's going to, okay, Jonathan, Acts 16, 20 and 21. 1 Corinthians 14, 19. 1 Corinthians. Okay, Don's got that one. 1 Corinthians 14, 19. David, 1 Timothy 6, 2, and 3. Would you do that? Okay, another one, 2 Timothy 2, 2. 2 Timothy 2, 2. Okay, Joe's got that. Jason, you can do Hebrews 5, 12. Okay, here's a little bit from Scripture about teaching, as we finish up the subject this morning. Jonathan, Acts 16, 20 and 21, please.
And brought them to the magistrate, saying, these men, being Jews, do exceedingly trouble our city, teach customs which are not
Thank you. The idea that they were being teachers, but they didn't like what they were teaching. And sometimes that may be the case. 1 Corinthians 14:19. Okay, five words versus 10,000, and the thrust of Paul's message there was to be teaching with understanding. And so if you don't understand it, all the words, even as this morning, if you hear all these words but then don't understand it, then we fail to take and communicate what needs to be communicated. 1 Timothy 6:2-3. Okay, he goes on with a warning there, and we don't figure out what's going to happen there. We didn't read that part, but wholesome words of the Lord Jesus Christ. God's word is wholesome words to take and consider and read and learn from. 2 Timothy 2:2. Okay, the things that you've heard from me, be able to teach others. That's important, and we'll get to that in just 1 second. I'll have Jason read his Hebrews 5:12.
For when for the time ye ought to be teachers, ye have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and have become such as have need of milk and not of strong meat.
Okay, so it refers to you are already a teacher, but you're not using that, and you're going back to the milk, and you're going backwards. But the other one refers to the fact, if you're a teacher, that you should teach others. One other thing that this person pointed out in this article was the retention factor. And from a lecture like this morning, maybe 5% will be remembered, if that much. Again, how do you improve that? Well, you would take notes. That's one method. Or listen to the tapes and go back and review it that might be made. Or start studying things on your own to take and think about it. But there's other methods that might take, and by having some illustrations, perhaps that sort of helps by putting a picture in there and helps the retention of what it is. But the person, and I don't know where he's getting the statistics from, but he says up to 90% is retained if you teach others. And so I thought that was pretty remarkable. And so the ones that we have upstairs is teaching our young people are retaining a great deal more than perhaps the people that are down here as a teacher. We have different people, not only myself, but many others that come up here and preach and teach. How much time would you think a person that's doing a message would put into a message to study for it? Huh? Hours probably. Even for 5-minute message or 15-minute message, hours. Don, how much time would you think you put in for yourself?
5 or 6 hours
at least. And so, again, 8 to 10. And sometimes it can go very quickly, but most of the time, most of the people I would say would spend hours and days perhaps thinking about some of the topics, and yet then to take and not think about them throughout the rest of the week, you know, you're hurting yourself. Again, you have been presented with the material. We've tried to present down through the years faithfully the Sunday school here, as well as the other meetings, God's Word, for you to take and not just be fed, but for you to take and evaluate it, to take and assimilate it, to take and digest it, to take and apply it and use it in your life. We trust that you might do that as we consider maybe a new Sunday school year coming up in September, Lord willing, with Jim and others, and that you might continue to learn and come to learn and have a desire to learn God's Word and study it. Mike, would you like to just end our time in prayer, and then you're dismissed.